Mr. Wilmoth.
Good morning. May it please the Court, Jonathan Wilmoth on behalf of Mr. Mancias-Ruiz. The primary issue in this case is the government charging an alien with both two grounds of removability, one as an aggravated felon with a crime of violence, and the other as having multiple crimes involving moral turpitude. The crimes that Mr. Mancias-Ruiz pled to, there were three counts, and so by doing this, the government has already established that the crimes...
Are you arguing that if someone has both a crime of moral conviction of a crime of moral turpitude and an aggravated felony, that he's better off than if he just had the aggravated felony?
Well,
isn't that what your argument amounts to?
In terms of,
isn't that what your argument amounts to?
It depends on the definition of better.
Is that what your argument amounts to?
Not exactly, Your Honor.
Close.
The problem is that it depends on what relief they may otherwise be eligible for. So if they are eligible, let's say, to adjust status through an immediate relative petition or something like that, then it makes a big difference. In this case, Mr. Mancias-Ruiz isn't. At the present time, he doesn't have another way of adjusting status before the court. So his reliance is solely on a 212C waiver based on the plea that he entered into in 1994.
Could you explain to me why, if a crime is an aggravated felony, what other pejorative terms might be attached to it? It's being an aggravated felony looks like it knocks out the kind of relief you want, and you could... Whether the term a crime of moral turpitude or really rotten behavior or scoundrel, knave, scurrilous, right? No matter how many other words are attached to it, it doesn't stop being an aggravated felony. So why isn't that the end?
Well, it isn't the end only because what we're looking at is whether or not there was a ground of exclusion. And so if it was an aggravated felony that wasn't also a crime involving moral turpitude or some other ground of exclusion at the time, then they wouldn't be eligible for it. And so here, a determination by the Board of Immigration Appeals that a crime of violence doesn't equate to a crime involving moral turpitude, there isn't a comparable ground, didn't happen until 2005. And our argument is that wasn't... When they made that decision, they weren't looking at a situation where the government had charged them with both, thus really ending the analysis. So it's clear that this crime was both a crime involving moral turpitude and an aggravated felony, such that they should be eligible for the waiver. The comparable ground analysis didn't really shouldn't necessarily factor in because the government's already done the work. The courts in reviewing this, including this court, have looked at the board's interpretation and said, well, we're going to defer to it because we don't want to get involved with going behind the charges to look at the actual criminal activity. And our argument is that isn't the case here. That isn't required because the government has already done that. They've said that this criminal act, you're deportable for these two things. One is an aggravated felony and the other... It's also a crime involving moral turpitude. The crime involving moral turpitude is the ground of exclusion or inadmissibility. So because those two are it's the same activity, they should be equated, and therefore they should be eligible for a 212C waiver. Essentially, that's our argument. At the time he pled, he was sentenced to 4 years with a 3-year on the second count that was stayed, which continued his eligibility. Had he served 5 years, he wouldn't have been eligible for a waiver. And so it was clear that at the time he was acting, taking the plea with the belief that he would have a waiver available to him. And like I said, the board hadn't conclusively ruled on this comparable ground analysis with crimes of violence until 2005 in the Brieva case. In this case, Mr. Mancias-Ruiz argued to the immigration judge and to the board both this very issue of the with what he terms the dual charging. The immigration judge recognized that this was a different fact pattern from Brieva, but then in her decision doesn't mention it. Similarly, the argument was raised to the board, and the board didn't mention it in terms of whether or not this changed the analysis. And so we would ask the court to remand it to the board for consideration of this specific fact pattern. It doesn't appear that this was the fact in the cases that they're citing, in Brieva or even in Komarenko, the Ninth Circuit case that is cited by most of the other courts.
What does moral turpitude mean?
Your Honor has asked that question a number of times over the years, and I am not going to give you any better answer than anyone else. The board has said it's vile, base. There isn't a very good definition for it. It's really bad behavior.
Well, the old common law definition looks more like fraud, where you're deceiving somebody else. And, of course, your client's two convictions, one count of robbery and two counts of assault with a deadly weapon, don't really look like fraud, but they certainly do look like aggravated felonies.
Yes, Your Honor. But the government has alleged that they were also crimes involving moral turpitude, and the immigration judge found that they were also crimes involving moral turpitude. It was there in the notice to appear, in the charging document. Those are the grounds that they're alleging. And in front of the immigration judge, they went through
the reason why. Well, they throw in all the grounds they can, unless one failed, right?
That may be, but the other...
I don't know why that should...
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that.
Why should that confer a benefit on your client?
And lastly, we would argue that the concerns of the courts in the Second Circuit in Francis and the Supreme Court in St. Cyr that an alien has a right to seek this relief are if they're similarly situated to the individuals who were excluded. So here, crimes involving moral turpitude are a ground of exclusion, and so our argument is that this is the same. The person is similarly situated. And the government themselves have established it, and there's no need in this case, for the court to look beyond the charges, because the charges themselves establish that the person is both deportable and inadmissible, and so therefore he should be eligible to seek a waiver under 212C. I'll note that in this case, the underlying merits of the waiver were never really addressed. The judge pre-terminated the application before there was a hearing on whether or not he warranted a waiver. And so we would ask the court to remand the case back to the board to consider these facts, or to find that the board's interpretation of regulation here isn't reasonable in the light of these facts. And that's all I have, Your Honors.
Thank you, Counsel. Mr. Robbins.
Good morning, Your Honors. Excuse me. May it please the Court. Jonathan Robbins here on behalf of Eric Holder, the respondent. As Your Honors noted, the petitioner in this case was convicted of two counts of assault with a deadly weapon and second-degree robbery. And as a result, consequently, he was charged in the notice to appear before the immigration court with two grounds of inadmissibility. There's the aggravated felony crime of violence and the two or more crimes involving moral turpitude charge. Now, there is no dispute that he's not eligible for a waiver under former 212C based on the aggravated felony crime of violence charge. That's never been disputed below. It's not disputed now. And so the only question which remains is, how does this extra charge with the two or more crimes involving moral turpitude have any relevance? And the short answer is that it doesn't. The notion that an alien, if the government hadn't charged him with an extra charge, that an alien who had less charges would somehow be entitled to this relief doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. And certainly, based on the board's interpretation of the case law and subsequent circuit authority, there isn't really any case law that seems to back up this idea either. When we say that he needs a 212C waiver, what 212C waiver doesn't wipe out the underlying conviction. What it does is it wipes out the ground of inadmissibility. So in other words, what he really needs in this case is he needs two waivers. He needs one for the aggravated felony crime of violence charge and one for the two or more crimes involving moral turpitude charge. Now, we know he can't get one for the aggravated felony charge, so sending it back down to the board to analyze this under the crimes involving moral turpitude charge really is going to be a futile endeavor. Not to mention the fact that the actual charge, you'd only waive one crime involving moral turpitude, and he was charged with two crimes involving moral turpitude, so it's going to be futile in that respect as well. Are there any questions with respect to that? It seems relatively straightforward. Certainly, other circuits which have considered this issue have all pretty much held an agreement that the fact that this could also be charged as a crime involving moral turpitude just isn't relevant to the analysis. Now the petitioner's argument, he sort of jumps on this language in other cases where the courts have said, well, we don't want to go into this analysis. What was happening in those cases is what aliens were doing is they were saying, well, my crime could have been charged as a crime involving moral turpitude, so I would be eligible for a waiver. And what the court was saying is we're not going to address that because we're not going to go into that analysis. But the courts weren't saying that it would somehow be relevant if the government had charged them. They were just specifically rationalizing why they weren't addressing it. As far as the petitioner's equal protection argument, first of all, this is a discretionary form of relief, so that doesn't really apply. But even if the court were to hold that to apply for that kind of discretionary relief implicated equal protection, an equal protection argument, he's not a similarly situated alien to those inadmissible aliens because he's inadmissible based on the aggravated felony crime of violence. Are there any specific questions with respect to that either? That's pretty much the long and short of it. I know I probably have a lot of time if there's anything specific.
Looks like there is not.
Okay.
Thank you
very
much
for your time, Your Honors.
Anything further, Mr. Wilmoth?
One of the things that I'd first like to respond to is whether or not a 212C waiver waives the aggravated felony, and it does. That's the whole point of looking at the statutory counterpart. Some aggravated felonies are waivable under 212C, and so our argument is that where there is a ground of inadmissibility here, this crime involving moral turpitude.
Now, wait, what kind of aggravated felony is and is not waivable under?
Well, what the board has said is that an aggravated felony is waivable if it has a statutory counterpart in the grounds of exclusion. And so our argument is here is that it does.
Why is that true in all aggravated felony cases, or is there something special about this one? Is it your view that all aggravated felonies are also crimes of moral turpitude?
No, Your Honor.
All right. What's the distinction?
The distinction initially is that the government themselves has said this is a crime involving moral turpitude and an aggravated felony. And in some cases that wouldn't be the case, especially in 94 when he was pleading. The grounds of inadmissibility and the aggravated felonies themselves have both been exponentially expanded over the years, in 96 in particular. And so at the time, there were a series of aggravated felonies that were not also, first off, not crimes involving moral turpitude, but secondly, not grounds of exclusion or inadmissibility. And I see that my time has expired. Thank you all very much.
Thank you, counsel. The case is taken under advisement.